a new world order.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
A new world order.
It's good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
It is a big idea. A new world order.
In a land of injustice and tyranny, the story is told of a writer proclaiming freedom and the principles of liberty of those who came before him, carrying a torch that burns like the human spirit. He rides only at night. Out of the mist comes the Midnight Rider.
Good night, welcome aboard. This is the Midnight Rider. How are you? My point chamber is Wednesday night. Happy Halloween, everybody. It's not really bad.
But I'm not gonna let them catch me, no. Not gonna let them catch the Midnight Rider.
Glad everybody's back with us here on the Midnight Rider. And momentary technical difficulty. It must be the gremlins in the machine. Well, did you have the trick-or-treaters come by? I heard the doorbell ring a couple times, but I wasn't able to go because I was doing other programs tonight. And I know my kids came back with a haul. They went to an actual kind of Halloween party. That we've been doing with some friends the last couple of years. I didn't get to go. But they came back a haul with a haul of candy. It's a Great American Candy Grab, folks. Happens every year. No costumes this year. I was kind of surprised with that with my kids. Just a sign that they're growing up, though. But my little grandkids, they went as pirates. I'm looking forward to getting the pictures of them because I didn't get to see them either. But we are here tonight. Tommy Cryer is going to join us after the break here in a couple of minutes. We're going to talk about the Sherry Peel Jackson trial and the situation with Edna Lane Brown and a number of other things that are coming down the pike. Tommy's got a website called truthattack.com. Also, his other website is liefreezone.com. So those are two sites you can check out. We'll talk with Tommy here in just a minute. Ron Paul for the month. It looks like about $2.6 million for October, $2.615 million, because just now after midnight Eastern time. And so not what they wanted as far as a goal of $4 million, but still I think it's fairly impressive. And then as of an hour ago, or well, about 2 hours ago, let's see if there's any more new information on it, 14,332 people have pledged to give $100 to Ron Paul's campaign on the 5th of November at thisnovember5th.com. It's www.thisnovember5th.com. So if you've not pledged, please do. And I'm looking forward to that day, watching that little ticker just go crazy. I'd love to crash the site, so many donations. That'd be awesome. All right, going to grab a break. We'll come back on the other side, do Mouseketeer roll call, and bring on Tommy Cryer to join us here on the broadcast tonight, right here on the Midnight Rider.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear, and here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new, alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com, or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365.
Are you concerned about cholesterol, blood pressure? Are you experiencing chest pain? Are you looking for a more natural method to help improve your health issues?
I had two mild heart attacks, and I had an 80 to 90% blockage in my artery. Don recommended I take this Cardiovite. I haven't had any chest pain since I've been on it. It's brought my cholesterol down. My blood sugar was really fluctuating from 10 to 14 when I went on the Cardiovite. You know, it really leveled it out. I'm really pleased. And I feel so good about it. I'll tell you, it's great for your circulation because I've noticed that I've had problems with my feet because of the diabetes, and they're getting better. They don't hurt as much. It's really great. I recommend this to anybody.
To learn more, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. Call 1-877-928-8822.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Back here on the Midnight Rider on this Wednesday night, Friday night on the program, we're going to have the Young Guns Roundtable, Lee Rogers of RogueGovernment.com, and man, has he had a ton of stories out lately. And Doug Owen of BlacklistedNews.com will come on and join us for the broadcast on Friday night to do kind of a complete wrap-up of the week's news and everything that has gone on. Tomorrow night, we might just do You Rant. That was pretty successful the first time, where you just have the opportunity to call in and give you 3 minutes in your rant. And I like that, and we may do that again tomorrow night if we don't have a guest in the meantime. Real quick, it's Mouseketeer roll call time as we head and take a look at the chat rooms. Both chat rooms are open. The first one at republicbroadcasting.org. Little nice group in there. Catherine, Jack Spratt, John G underscore DDI, Michael, Rogue Dolphin is in there as always, Stephen C, and Wolf. Over in the Midnight Rider chat room at midnightridershow.com. A Dude in the Sticks, Aberry Jane, Buckwheat, Dallister, Doug, James, J.D. Spido, Josh, K. Barker M.T., Chris, Lee, Michael, Mike C.T.W., the official White Horse Souse, Sidetracked, and the 00 Viper. So hello to everybody in both chat rooms. Glad you're there with us. And if you're not in there, you ought to come in there and join us. Everybody's having a good time, a good conversation flowing in both rooms. Want to welcome to the broadcast Tommy Crier. You hear him every Saturday here on the Republic Broadcasting Network from 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time on the Live Free Zone, Tommy, earlier this year, sent the IRS packet. Just beat the doo-doo out of him in court. And we're going to talk to – I asked Tommy to come on tonight. He's a constitutional law attorney. I've been practicing law for over 30 years in Louisiana. We're going to talk a little bit about the Sherry Peel Jackson trial, among some other things. Tommy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Glad you get to come on with us at such short notice. What are your feelings about the verdict? And we'll get into what you know about the trial and that kind of thing. What your feelings about the verdict?
Well, naturally, I'm disappointed, Mike. We'd all hoped for a couple of back-to-back victories to really up and juice everybody up. But it just didn't pan out that way. Particularly, this was a particularly vitriolic prosecution. And I think that it has to do with her having been a former IRS agent, just like it's personal. Just like when they pursue Joe Bannister, it's a personal thing. They see him as a traitor to the brotherhood.
Right.
And I think that they singled her out for some particularly rough treatment. Part of it was that they employed a new tactic that we don't see very often in these types of cases, in that they brought in a couple of or three witnesses after the defendant's case in chief. And when that happens, the defendant doesn't have a right to come back and rebut those witnesses. So the in this case, Larry was permitted to put Sherry back on the stand to at least deny some of the claims that were being made to the character assassination witnesses that they brought up after she had finished testifying. She had also received some fairly rough treatment during her cross-examination, and by the accounts that I have, and of course I haven't seen the transcript, but by all of the accounts from several people that were present at the trial, her responses to these to the cross-examination attempts by this prosecutor were not very strong. She was not able to really stand there and toe-to-toe with him, and that's understandable, particularly for a layman. I mean, right. Like I pointed out earlier, I think on some other show, I don't remember what it was, but for crying out loud, the lady is an accountant. She's not a lawyer. She's, if I jumped in the ring with a professional boxer, I mean, I'd never lay a glove on the guy. Well, these are professional boxers, and she's in the ring with him. And so naturally, he was able to slap her around a bit. And Larry is kind of helpless in that he can't come to her rescue without making her look worse.
Right.
It's a dilemma that every defense lawyer has to struggle with as to when do you stand up and where do you try to make a stop of it? Where does that actually hurt you more than it helps? So she got worked over pretty bad on cross-examination, from what I understand.
Yeah, and from what I had heard, Tommy, that basically this prosecuting attorney laid a trap for her and she kind of fell into it.
Well, I don't know if it was a trap so much as it was just a confrontation. I think that the attorney did lay a trap insofar as the witnesses he brought up on rebuttal. I think that he kind of laid back. He was indifferent. He was lethargic. He was fumbling around. He didn't seem to be paying a great deal of interest in the prosecution of the case until after Larry rested the defendant's case. And then, actually when he sat down and tendered her for cross-examination, and that's when this guy decided, okay, you had your shot, now it's all my show from here out. And he took full advantage of that.
So basically, he just kind of flip-flop. Instead of presenting everything in his case in chief, he waited till after Larry rested his case, and then he went to war.
Well, he went to war actually a little before that, but not much more. I mean, there wasn't anything left for Larry to put on except for a redirect trying to rehabilitate Sherry after cross-examination. Rehabilitation of a witness is a very difficult thing to do because the damage has already been done.
Right.
I mean, you're already, you know, as I don't like to use slapped around, but I mean, you've already made the witness appear to be less than 100% certain and less than 100% knowledgeable of the facts that they're testifying to. And, that generates doubts. The sad thing about this is that it is not, Sherry's burden to prove that she believes something. It's the government's burden to prove that she knows or believes something else. So that's the sad part, is that when you damage the credibility of the defendant in a situation like this, that shouldn't be probative of anything. It should not prove the contrary. You just, if I tell you something happened and you don't believe me, does that mean that the opposite happened? No.
Right.
It just means you don't believe me when I say it didn't happen. So, but people get confused, particularly
yeah.
juries, because they don't know a lot, don't understand the law and the process.
Well, was this jury given, instructed as to what the law was, or were they, I'm sure they weren't, you know, told about jury nullification, but were they given good instructions when they went to deliberate?
Oh, they had some instructions that were good and some instructions that were not so good. It usually is a Duke's mixture. I mean, they were instructed that she was required to file a return, I'm sure. I have not seen the instructions, but I'm sure that was in there. They were instructed on the willfulness defense, because Larry told me he did get a good willfulness defense charge.
Right.
And that the jury was instructed that if you find that she believed that she wasn't required, you must acquit. Well, they took that, though, to mean that if you don't believe that she had a genuine good faith belief, then you must convict. Well, I think it needs to go one step farther than that. In order to convict, you must be proven beyond reasonable doubt that she did know and did believe that she was under a duty to file. But that still needs some work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because it was shocking, because I, you know, I'd read the day one report and I thought, oh wow, you know, this, things are looking pretty good here. The government puts their case to bed early and we're off to the races here. And it looks, the reports that came out, you know, from day one were very positive.
And
then,
they were. And,
yeah.
And justifiably so. It was going very well for her. And it went well for her throughout her testimony. The only thing that threw a little bit of a monkey wrench in is that Larry and them were planning on putting her testimony on Wednesday, because the government said they were going to take Monday and Tuesday and into Wednesday to do their case. So he thought he had another day or so to work on her testimony, on the delivery of it. A lawyer can't tell a witness what to testify to, but he can tell a witness how to testify to it.
Right.
I brief my people on things not to do, that the body language, the nonverbal communications that jurors don't even realize they're picking up on, what to avoid, what to do, you know, how to be believed, because whoever is believed wins the case.
Right. Yeah, and just, you know, and like you said, you know, we'd had two victories back to back, and you know, a third one here would have really been nice. Any chances for appeal here?
Yeah, there's several shots at that. One shot would be, you know, of course the issue over whether or not she was permitted to or given an adequate opportunity to explain the reasons for her belief that she was not liable and not required to file a return.
Right.
The judge was very restrictive on that.
We'll pick it up here on the other side, Tommy. We're going to grab a break here real quick. Don't go anywhere. This is the Midnight Rider right here on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Eating a well-balanced diet filled with whole foods is sometimes hard to achieve, so supplementation can be beneficial. But WholeFoodToday.com believes that if you want to supplement, you should be doing so with products made from complex and natural whole foods, which the body can recognize and utilize as food, rather than with synthetic formulas of isolated vitamins made in chemical factories. Whole Food Today is dedicated to bringing you the finest health products at an incredible value. Nutrient formulas for men and women, super green food formulas made from over 30 vegetables, legumes, sprouts, immunity health formulas, coconut oil, krill oil, and many other products made 100% naturally. Visit us today at www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. That's www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. Whole Food Today offers free shipping to all orders anywhere in the continental U.S. Whole Food Today, empowering people to attain and maintain extraordinary health.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Back here on the Midnight Rider, we'll take your calls starting at the bottom of the hour at 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. We're talking with Tommy Cryer tonight about the Sherry Peel Jackson case. And as we were going to the break, Tommy, you were talking about some areas where an appeal might be successful.
Toward the end of Sherry's testimony, as they started out on the first day on Monday, the judge was being pretty lenient in allowing not only testimony, but allowing exhibits in. As a matter of fact, she allowed in a copy of the the full-page ad that was in USA Today that prompted Sherry to start looking for the liability provision. They also allowed in some excerpts from tax return information and instruction book that said that the income tax is based upon voluntary compliance. But on the second day, the judge became much more restrictive, much more conservative in permitting Sherry to testify would not let her testify concerning particular Supreme Court cases. I would only allow her to identify Supreme Court cases as a group, and only then to describe what she got out of them, not what they said, but what she got out of them in a general sense. I was very restricted in my testimony as well, but not quite that restricted. I was more restricted than say, the judge was in Irwin's case on his testimony, but not nearly as restrictive as this lady was with Sherry. I think that was across the line. Now, whether or not the appeal court agrees, you know, they don't ask me about those things. I think they should.
Yeah, I think they should too. You can call you right up and say, hey, what do you think? Because I mean, I would think that one state of mind regarding what they believe and what they don't believe in this instance is a key thing. If you're not able to totally represent that, it would seem to me that your right to due process is being violated.
Well, a lot of due process comes down to in a jury trial as to the credibility of the witnesses, but you also have to have an opportunity to be heard. And
right.
If you are restricted from putting on evidence that is admissible, is trustworthy, is relevant and material, as to and telling your story, the facts that led up to your conclusion that you are not legally required to file a return, then you have been denied an essential part of due process, and that is the right to a meaningful hearing. Not just a hearing, but a meaningful hearing. And I think that these restrictions that this judge placed on her testimony were erroneous. Now, whether or not, like I said, the appellate court finds that as a basis to reverse or not, I don't know, but I certainly hope so.
Yeah, well, yeah, most certainly. Would that throw the conviction out, or would it just call for a new trial?
I would call for a new trial. It's very rare that you see cases where the appellate court will actually enter in a judgment of acquittal or would direct the district judge to do so. That would only be in a case where they found that it should be reversed because there was not even one scintilla of evidence to support the jury's conclusion on that element of the crime. On the element of willfulness, that decision or that finding is supported only to the extent of a scintilla by the fact that she previously did file, indicating that she, quote, had knowledge that she was supposed to. But, you know, the sad thing about these kinds of cases is that they are all crimes committed between the ears.
Right.
It's not, I mean, most crimes involve doing something wrong, hitting somebody, taking something, hurting someone, stealing something, just going where you're not supposed to, breaking into some house or vehicle. These are actions that are criminal. But in the case of a failure to file charge, the defendant is accused of having done nothing. I mean, there's nothing that he's accused of having done.
Yeah, there's no victim.
It's not a crime not to file the tax return, because a lot of people don't file tax returns, and they're not even, you know, they're not required to either.
Right.
And the government says they're not required to, and so it's not a crime. So not filing a tax return is not a bad thing. Not paying a tax is not a bad thing, because a lot of people don't owe taxes, and the government admits that. But so the only place that this crime occurs or doesn't occur is between the defendant's ears. That's making a state of mind a crime.
Yeah.
That without any action. Now, for me to do something like, for example, to attempt to commit a robbery, I have to have a specific intent to commit a robbery when I try to do that. That's an element of the crime, but it also requires an action, some action toward the attempted crime, but not
right.
In the case of a tax crime. So a tax crime is nothing but a mind crime. It's a criminal. It makes it a crime to think something.
Yeah, it's a thought crime. Back in a minute with more. We're talking with Tommy Cryer here on the Midnight Rider. More around the corner.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear. And here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new, alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com, or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. It is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Number again, 800-313-9443. If you want to join us here on the Midnight Rider, we're talking with Tommy Cryer tonight. He's our guest. We're talking about the Sherry Peel Jackson trial here. Tommy, any other areas for appeal? You know, we talked about her state of mind, but any other areas that right off the bat that's shown itself?
There were pretrial motions, and I'm not really sure what exactly pretrial motions were. I know that Larry filed an APA motion, and I don't know whether he filed it on the issue of the standard exemption trigger or on the issue of the tax rates, but I do know he filed at least one APA motion, and those were denied, of course. It's standard procedure just to deny it, and they can't come up with a reason to because they don't have one, but they just say denied.
That was kind of similar in your case, too, where you'd filed a number of motions. They didn't even respond.
Yeah, well, they couldn't respond. Take the APA motion, for example. You know, Congress, at one point, and I'm not going to make a liar out of myself by guessing, but I think it was somewhere around 91. At some point said, all right, this from now on, the treasurer, the Secretary of Treasury is going to fix the standard exemption based upon the best inflation rate from the CPI from the Labor Department. Now, it's questionable in my mind as to whether or not he could have delegated that, but it doesn't matter because the Secretary never promulgated any rule or regulation fixing the standard exemption.
Right.
So since 91 or so, we haven't had a standard exemption. All that he does is he just issues an announcement saying, well, this is a new number. He doesn't put it through the process that the Administrative Procedures Act requires in order to promulgate any rule or regulation that has the benefit of the effect of law. So it's null and void. There is no standard exemption. The same thing applies, and I believe this was in 88 or so, that Congress said from now on they're going to do this with the tax rates, adjusting the tax rates for inflation. And the Secretary does that. Well, the only way he can do that is to promulgate it according to the Administrative Procedures Act, which requires him to publish that in the Federal Register as a proposed rule or regulation, and giving his reasons and the methodology at which it was employed and which CPI, because he has to pick one. There are several versions of the CPI. Some of them are including everything. Some of them are including everything except for oil or gas. Some of them are including everything except for interest, loan interest. You know, in other words, you have different versions. So people are supposed to have an opportunity to argue that, hey, that's not the best version of the CPI, right, or your mathematics is incorrect. They're supposed to hold it open for comment and objections. And then, after that input, then they republish it in the Federal Register. And at that point, it becomes a regulation with a force and effect of law. None of that was ever done, either for the standard exemption or for the tax rates. So we have no tax rates. All he did was he just recalculated the calculation tables in the instruction manual. Well, the instruction manual is no more a law or regulation than Mad Magazine is.
What about the jury here? Of the 12 that were selected in the one alternate, you've got one lady who was a... at least two involved with county government, one retired from the Social Security Administration, one with the American Cancer Society, which is a 501c3, one that was married to a government accountant. Not a very deep pool to choose from.
No. And the problem that you have here is with the way that juries are selected in federal court differs from what we generally would expect, because more of us have done service or been exposed to the state court processes, which are much more open and are a better selection process. In federal court, the way it's done is different. They bring the jurors in, and the jurors are each assigned a number, prospective jurors, and usually you'll have a pool from 30 to 45 in your veneer, what we call veneer, the group from which the jury is going to be selected. Each side gets so many strikes, and so they do the voir dire, which is usually conducted by the court in federal court. Some of them allow some limited voir dire examination by the attorneys. It's kind of up to the judge. And both sides are given an opportunity to submit questions they want the judge to ask, but not necessarily have a right to have it asked. And after that, well, each side turns in the names of the jurors that they choose to strike.
Right.
Now, if number one is struck, he's gone. If number two is not struck by either one, he's number one on the jury.
Right.
If number three, four, five, so you know, the ones that aren't struck are selected for the jury until you have 12. And then you pick one and sometimes two alternates would be the next ones in line that are not struck. Now, do the math on this. If both sides, in Sherry's case, both sides got three strikes. So you got 12 jurors. Assuming that you would exercise your strike within that first zone of 19, you have six jurors that were struck, and assuming that you didn't both strike the same one. So that's 18, plus you've got an alternate, that's 19. Two alternates at 20. You never go past that.
Wow.
Not with three strikes apiece.
No, and then
once they realize that those first 20 were not disqualified for any particular reason, as a matter of for cause, they could have turned the rest of the prospective jury veneer loose.
Right.
Because that's what you had. Whoever happened to be in that first 19, 12 of those people were going to be your jury. That's not much of a selection process.
No.
And you only get the three strikes. Once you use the three strikes, you're out. I mean, whatever comes up next, it could be, anyone. I mean, that's why you can only take out the three worst ones. Now, Larry has a good way of describing that. He said the government strikes the water, you strike the dirt, and you end up with the mud. and that's basically, she did not get a good jury selection here. I mean, that was not the best of cases. Best case scenario by any stretch. But that's how that jury process works. And I don't like it. It's not the best way, you know, to pick a jury in my book. But I don't write the book either.
Right. And do these people walk into the room at random, or are they already given numbers from the get-go?
No, these people are pre-screened for qualifications of a juror, and those qualifications have to do with age, citizenship, residency, this, that, and the other. When they are selected from the voter registration rolls, they are selected supposedly at random. Each of these prospective jurors is sent a questionnaire to fill out about their personal information, background, history, record. And those are turned in. And then those jurors who are obviously not meeting the qualifications required to serve on a jury are eliminated from what we call a wheel. Then out of that wheel, which consists of anywhere from 200 to 300 prospective jurors usually, for each jury, they will select a veneer of anywhere from 30 to 45 people, depending on how difficult they think it's going to be to see a jury. And that's how it's done. Those are selected at random from the wheel. And so you've got a random selection from the voter registration, and then you have a random selection from qualified jurors on the qualified wheel. That's just a pool of 200 or 300 people that have been established as having all of the qualifications to serve on jury. They're old enough. They live in the right place. They're not deaf or blind, and they can understand English. So that's the process. So you just kind of, it's a luck of the draw. I was very fortunate. I think I got a pretty good jury.
Yeah, I think you did too, obviously. But I mean, when they walk into the courtroom and the judge begins to question them, and the attorneys are there and they get to make, to write their strikes down, are these people already placed in order, or are they just in there randomly?
No, they are in order. They come in order. As a matter of fact, usually you get the questionnaires, copies of the questionnaires ahead of time, and you know what that juror's number is.
Ah, okay.
Ahead of time. You know who the first prospective juror is going to be, who the second one is, who the third one is. And that's why whenever you prepare for one of these things, you sit down with these questionnaires and you kind of pre-screen them. And some of these, you mark them in either of three categories, or one of three categories. He's either a plus, or he's a minus, or he's a zero. If you don't have one going one way or the other, you've got a guy who says, yeah, I want this guy on the jury. Then you got some that you say, I don't want that one on the jury. He's a strike. So you have those already marked and identified. So whenever you sit down at the counsel table, first thing, you take a large piece of paper or a small one, depending on, how many you've got in the panel, and you open it up in blocks, and you number those blocks the way that they are seated in the courtroom. And as each of them is introduced, and you've got your questionnaires there, you can start filling those blocks in with their names, and then you put the plus or minus in there, or S for strike, or a plus for okay, whatever you want.
Right.
But you start, it's a process that you work at. And then as he is asking questions, you're making notations in those boxes with their names. And when one of them raises their hand, when he says, have any of you done thus and so, or had thus and so occur, or read this, or that, heard that, then he will go back to him and ask them, okay, what did you see? What did you hear? What do you know? What do you not know? Who do you know? How are you connected? How do you know this guy? And you take notes. And then that's what allows you to decide who the three worst ones are. Now, it was another thing that helped in my jury. In this district, the defendant got 10 strikes. The government got 6. So we were able to eliminate 10 people. What we thought were the worst 10 prospects. And that helped immensely over just having 3 strikes. That would be very difficult to expect a good jury and only being able to strike the worst 3.
Right, and it also brings up the question too, Tommy, is that if your prospective pool literally is only 19 people, the opportunity to fix a jury would be easy to carry out.
Yeah, and the temptation, of course, is great because they have an awful lot at stake here, not just money, but their empowerment, their privilege, their right to go out pistol whip peasants. That's very important to these people. Most of these people that you're dealing with are very shallow, very cruel. They're bullies. And they derive a great deal of satisfaction and a feeling of self-worth when they can go out and cause suffering in another human being. It makes them feel powerful.
Right.
That feeling of empowerment, not to mention the amount of money involved, is a huge incentive to take chances to ensure the conviction of anybody who would dare to disagree with you.
Yeah, and then you couple that with somebody who's got a different tactic that's going to bring former employees, former coworkers, in who are on the government dole, in to testify against your client. And I mean that's a hard mountain to climb right there.
Yes, it is. And that was one of the reasons why the first thing that we did in my case was file a motion to examine the jury selection process. It kind of helped us to keep them honest.
Right.
And as somebody pointed out, well, surely they wouldn't do that. And I pointed out, I said, well, the technique works equally well whenever they're not tempted.
Right.
But not doing it, can cause a problem if they are. But yeah, there have been cases before where the government has put a plant in. And sometimes one is enough. Because they get in there and they start ranting and raving about, you got to pay taxes, everybody's got to pay taxes, we all know that. This woman's just, we're having to carry her load. We're having to pay more taxes just because she's welching. This is costing us money. It's like she's stealing from us. How much of that kind of rhetoric does it take in a jury to twist it up?
And especially if they're in there,
if I were to say something like that in an elevator with a prospective juror, I could actually be accused of jury tampering.
Yeah. Well, and the bailiff did say that to somebody as they were walking to their car after the first day. Mark Unano overheard him talking about
right.
One of the, you know.
That's right. That was reported as having been overheard, but not in the presence of the jury.
Right.
But what else is the bailiff saying, and what else is he saying? Who else is he telling?
Well, what's he saying when he brings him into the room? When the jury's escorted into the room, I mean, if he's talking this out of school, you know, on the way to the car, what's he saying in the hallway?
Who's to say he isn't doing that? Now, I'll tell you, the marshals that were involved in my case, and I think marshals overall for a law enforcement agency, they're cut above as a rule. And matter of fact, on the way out, I was treated royally by the marshals, both coming in and out of the building. They knew that I was on the deck, and I was treated just with the same amount of respect that I always give whenever I walk into that courtroom.
Right.
Or in the courthouse. And when on the way out of the courtroom after the acquittals, one of the marshals that was holding the door open for all of us to come out, he didn't pick up the phone power. And he said, "Mr. Pryor, I just want you to know, congratulations, I was praying for you all the way."
Excellent. Excellent. Back in a minute with more with Tommy Cryer. 800-313-9443 if you want to join us right around the corner. We'll be right back.
Listening to RBN has helped you to prepare for an emergency and invest in the gold and silver markets, but now you'd like help managing your other investments. Would you prefer personalized investment advice? Onesti Investment Advisors can help. Onesti Investment Advisors will customize a portfolio with no conflicts of interest. Onesti Investment Advisors is a fee-based firm. We do no underwriting and receive no commission, so we always look after your interest. The better you do, the better we do. Get diversification by investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, and more. Onesti Investment Advisors can help fund education, plan for retirement, lower your taxes, increase retirement income, and protect against a falling dollar. You've worked hard for your assets. Former floor trader and certified financial planner certificate, John Onesti, has the experience to help grow your investments. If you're looking to improve your investment results, call or email for a free consultation. Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Click on our banner ad on RBN or visit our website at Onesti Advisors. Advisors.com. Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear. And here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com. Or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365.
back here on the Midnight Rider, here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mike Chambers with you here on a Wednesday night. It's Halloween, October 31st, 2007. We're talking with constitutional law attorney Tommy Cryer. You can hear his show every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. It's the Live Free Zone right here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Tommy, have they scheduled a date for sentencing for Sherry yet?
I know they just shut it down, and of course it'll have to go through the pre-sentence investigation and report process, there'll be, the judge will enter an order when it gets ripe for her to appear. Also, the judge didn't even consider whether or not it would be necessary for additional bond or security for a post-conviction bond. Now, post-sentencing, they're going to have to make an application for an appellate release bond, which the judge may or may not permit. But that's yet to be seen.
But how long does that process normally take?
Usually within a couple of months. It depends on how involved the investigative process is. You could also have some squabbles over how much money is involved, because the amount of money that they show as the harm done to the government is oftentimes in dispute. And that's important, because that determines, according to a schedule, how much they give them. Although that is no longer supposed to rule, as a practical matter, they still use the old guidelines that are supposed to have been stopped.
So they just make up the rules as they go along then?
Yeah, and that's not at all unusual in a federal court situation. You got to remember, these federal judges are different from the judges that you have in your state court. They're usually elected, and usually for a term. A federal judge is not elected, he's anointed.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes a judge for life. Federal judges are also extremely privileged. I mean, they live in these huge temples, opulent, exorbitant, extravagant temples erected to their holiness. And they have these. Have you ever been in a federal judge's chambers?
No, I have not.
The Pope would be impressed. They're definitely more like papal quarters.
Oh wow!
They're just extremely lush, lavish. They've got their own quarters, really, more than chambers. It's more like having a huge suite. But these guys are people of privilege, and they're isolated. People are afraid to say, you're wrong about that, or that was out of line about that. And so consequently, they get what I call the Michael Jackson syndrome, where they don't get any reality feedback,
right,
and nothing is unreasonable anymore. And they begin then to think of themselves as, as godless, I call them. Now, there are exceptions to this. There are some very decent federal judges out there. But this is a very common occupational disease among federal judges, is to get the godlet syndrome. I've often advocated, I don't know, how many of your listeners are aware of the ancient Roman practice of allowing a returning general who was victorious, a processional, a parade coming into Rome as a treat, as a reward.
Right.
And as he would come through the streets, and he would have all these slaves behind him, and all of his tribute, and all these things, the loot that they had brought back on display in the parade.
Hold that right there, Tommy. We got to grab a break. I didn't hear the music. Back in just